Hi, this is Larry London. Welcome to Border Crossings. We have a special guest in our studios today. She's on tour for a brand new album, and you know her around the world. She's one of the most famous country music, Americana performers in music today. On tour for her seventh album, Tiff Merritt is with us. Welcome to D.C.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And congratulations on all the success.
Thank you very much.
It's kind of amazing when I just look at all this stuff that you've done, seven albums in, and all these tours, and you've got a live album in London, and all the
You're
different things.
You're so nice. I actually didn't know I was as famous as you just made me sound.
Well, you know.
But I have been working a long time, and I take a lot of pride in being a working artist. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there are a lot of definitions of success, and I think spending time playing your instrument and being a working artist is really where the heart of it all is.
And you were nominated for a Grammy,
mm-hmm.
and that was a number of years ago for Best Country Album
yeah.
at that time. So where would you say you best fit in? Are you a country artist? I see you've been nominated for Americana Music Awards
yeah,
as well.
Yeah, I'm probably more of a, you know, folky Americana. Mm-hmm. I'm a songwriter, and I definitely play roots music. I mean, I think if you are talking about mainstream pop country, mm-hmm. they don't like me. So, you know, if you're talking about country like Kitty Wells or Emmylou Harris or something like that, there is that thread in my music. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up listening to Dylan and Dolly Parton and you know, I think roots music, a lot of it is fingers of the same hand. But no, I'm not a mainstream country artist.
And I guess there was a time when you preferred songwriting to actually performing.
Well, I mean, if you've ever spent time on the road, it's pretty easy to see how that could happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the road is an intense place, but I come at this as a writer. You know, when I was in my early 20s and starting a band, I was in a writing program. So I've always been really at home writing, and I think I don't know that I would get up in front of people and, you know, shake my hair around if I didn't have something to say that I was proud of.
So tell me about the new album, Stitch of the World. Is this album more of the same, or is this different than things you've done before? Because you've changed direction a number of times as far as record labels.
Yeah.
So this is, I think, second or third album.
Well,
with
you
the
know,
new
when
label.
when you change record labels, that's like change. You know, that's not changing your style or it's a little more like changing your dress. But I do have a wonderful record label that's in North Carolina called Yep Rock. And so that's a very familial situation because I'm a North Carolinian. But, you know, I think that I try to never do anything, you know, never hoe the same row the same way. And hopefully it makes sense if you're listening to my music that I'm hopefully getting better as a writer and a performer. And this record in particular, I had a really incredible cast of musicians. Some really dreamy folks, Mark Rebo on the guitar, Jay Bellarose on the drums, Eric Haywood here on the pedal steel, and you know, some really fabulous folks, Sam Beam from Iron and Wine helping out. So, you know, I think it's, we made it in 4 days, which was very, very fast.
Yes.
And I think that I enjoy that a lot. I enjoy having to go in and perform and lay it down. Maybe I would have liked 5 or 6 days, but it was a really interesting group of people.
Why the rush? Why? That's unusual to put an album together in that amount of time.
The word starts with an M, and it's called money.
Oh, okay. I like your honesty. Of course, costs. Now, when you recorded the album, you were pregnant.
I was 6 months pregnant.
And so maybe that had something to do with wanting to get that over with.
No, actually, that was, you know, doing it that fast, I was anxious about it, but I also trusted the musicians that I had around me a lot. And I knew that like at 8:30 or 9 o'clock every night, I was just going to fall asleep in whatever chair I was sitting in. So, that was the part that made me nervous, but I was really lucky. Music and singing and playing a guitar when you're pregnant is really takes on a whole new intimacy because you have this really important audience member that's a part of the hum, you know, that you know, when you really are singing, it's not your throat, it's all the way from your feet and all through all your organs, and really about opening your heart. And so to share that with this little unknowable creature is really a lot of fun.
And the baby must have responded, I'm sure, during the songs and kicking and moving.
Mostly she responded when I got still, and she'd go, "Come on, Mom. What's up?
I want some more. Next track.
Yeah. And she really loves making noises herself. So it's, you can see, yeah, but she's going to be a scientist.
A musician after a scientist. All right. Tiff Merritt is in our studios. You have an accompanist.
Eric Haywood.
Eric.
Eric's played with the Pretenders and Ray LaMontagne and Sunvolt. And
did you play with Dylan, too?
No, you had a guitarist with Dylan,
I think.
I did play with Charlie Sexton, who's Dylan's right hand. He helped me make a record called Another Country. He's a lovely, lovely man.
Some talented musicians.
Yeah, I've been very lucky to surround myself with some really great people.
Would you do a song for us?
I will.
What's this called?
This is called Dusty Old Man. 1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Peace of my mind make no difference. He won't back down, and he won't make claims. He's mean as a snake. He's my dusty old man. Yeah, he's mean as a snake. He's my dusty old man. He said,
Sounding great. Tiff Merritt.
Thank you.
Live here on Border Crossings. Love that sound.
Thank you.
And you played Bonnaroo. You toured with Joan Baez. You've traveled the world and things like that. I mean, your experiences, have they given you insight into music? Have they given you ideas on songs? Have you written songs that came about because of the environment you were in at the time?
Absolutely. I mean, I think being a writer is a little bit like being a sponge, and you're just constantly taking it in. I think the road is a really hard place to write every day, because you are responding so much to your environment and to how rapidly things are changing, and it's not the most grounded place in the world. So you do have to go home and get quiet. I mean, I've had some really wonderful experiences. I've seen a lot of really amazing places. I've met a lot of really interesting people. I've also had, you know, being on the road is a comedy of errors, and you have the big, 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 big book of really comedy, terrible gigs that you've played, and the little tiny book of the really perfect gigs that you played. So there's a certain amount of just going with the flow and enjoying being free those couple of hours every night that you're playing. You do get to be a better musician every day.
Do you have a preference if you could choose between, like, the Bonnaroos where there's 50,000 people or in a smaller club where there's a couple hundred, a couple thousand?
You know, if I could do anything, I would play theaters that sat maybe 1,000 people, 2,000 people.
Better connection with the audience?
Yeah, I will say that I don't play for 50,000 people on any sort of nightly basis. And so I'm not saying that that's, you know, within my reach, but I have played enough to know that that's really a very sweet pocket where you respond to an audience and it's very intimate, and the sound system is nice and the atmosphere is nice, and it's really, everyone's listening, the musicians are able to listen, and that seems like the right kind of human touch to me.
And so, 7 albums in now, do you find that it's getting easier or harder as you go along?
I think it's really important to think about being a musician like you would any job, because you can drive yourself crazy saying, well, you know, I'm a musician and this and this and this and these are the problems I face, because if I were a painter, there would be problems I would face. They would just be different. So, you know, I think putting together every album has a certain set of problems, and they're different every time. And, you know, 7 albums in, I think that I'm a better musician, and I certainly hope that I'm a better artist and writer. I started this business when people actually bought records, and now how music and intellectual property are disseminated is so different. It's hard to keep up, and it's definitely hard to get paid. So that's, you know, it's like any job. I'm now in my 40s, and I have a really happy problem that I have to be a good mom. It's different from when I was in my 20s and I had a hangover. You know, it changes.
Yeah, so I was asking, has becoming a mom changed your writing? I mean, now you're thinking about, oh my gosh, my daughter's going to hear this stuff from her mom.
Gosh, that's interesting that you put it that way. That's not the way that I've thought about it. I mean, I feel like being a mother for me is an extremely grounding thing, and immediately what is important and what is not important is sorted out. And as a writer, I immediately think of all the things I want to tell her, and I write about that, and I want to record or put into words how much love and joy have come in to my life just by being her mom. You know, that is it's the door to a whole new thing that I did not know about. So I think it's more an opening than it is something directly. But I do think about writing things that I want her to have. I want her to know how I felt or how I struggled or when I had doubts, and so that she will have that when she's a grown up.
And how old is she now?
She's 11 months old.
11, almost a year. Walking stage, coming
not,
close.
Not walking, but she says woof woof a lot. She really likes dogs, and she points at everything. And
does she like mommy's music on the radio or in the car? Or?
You know, I have to say that she doesn't hear mommy's music very.
No?
It isn't like we. She hears us rehearse, and she wants to be around that. Mm. But I don't put my records on for her. We put Miles Davis or John Coltrane or something like that on.
So tell me about the new album, Stitch of the World. Is there a message on this new album? Were you trying to put songs together that had a certain theme about them? Or?
Well, you know, I always want an album to be like a book of short stories where you begin in one place and you go through this journey of somewhat different perspectives, but it all holds together and you feel like you're somewhere different at the end. On this record, if I could put into a couple sentences what was going on, I had been on the road for about 3 years, and my marriage was falling apart, and I was turning 40, and I took some time off, and I wrote really hard, but I also was writing about some things, like you were just saying, does it get easier or harder? I mean, I was writing about some things that will probably take most of my life to get perspective on, or maybe I won't ever get perspective on. And that's a scary place to write from. I think when you're younger, you think that you have some sense of authority when you're writing, that you sorted that out, and here it is on paper. And this was a scary kind of honesty, because I was writing without perspective, and I just kind of had to take that leap of faith. And I actually ended up thinking that I was really proud of that, and that that's actually a more honest place to come from.
Mm, wonderful. Well, you know, it's great whenever a singer-songwriter becomes vulnerable
and
becomes
great.
Very honest and open. Well, from a listening...
Everyone roll their eyes.
From a listening perspective, you know, you can feel a song that's coming from the heart.
Yeah, no, you can. And you have to trust that, you know. You feel kind of dopey doing
yes.
that all the time when you're a singer-songwriter, but... You know, it is what it's about. It really is.
Tiff Merritt is in the studio, and I'm going to ask if you do another song for us.
Please, absolutely. This is a song called Wait For Me.
Dashboard sunshine, driving west, gonna find something I ain't found yet. Hope it's there, hope it ain't left. Wait for me, wait for me. I wanna do right by my baby, and
Very nice. Very nice. Tiff Merritt. So the name Tift, yes. That is not a name that you'd hear commonly. In fact, I have never heard the name Tift before until you.
Yeah, well, everybody else named Tift is related to me.
Is that that's a family thing?
Yeah, it's a family name. I mean, you know, Southerners do this. The name falls out, and then they start naming everybody that name. So I have an Uncle Tift.
Wow.
Yeah, and my grandfather's name was James Tift, and I have a cousin, Tift. I'm the only woman named Tift.
And where did that come from? I mean, you know, other than everybody shared it. When it started, it was from what?
It was a last name in our family, and when it fell out, I started using it again. So, I mean, specifically the geography, I think it's English.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever trace your roots on
Ancestry.com? Oh, come on, I'm Southern. I got more crazy, you know.
Big family tree, huh?
I got so many stories. That's my mother's family in particular has tons and tons and tons of cousins. But my father's, too. I mean, you know, as a storyteller, I think your family and those stories that you hear, that's the lore of what you can do with a life. And it's really important to think about how big the chances people took when they got on boats and said goodbye and, you know, couldn't write letters, I mean, let alone a text message. So right. I think the bigness of life is really reflected in the stories of how things happened in different generations. So, yeah, I love the romance of family stories, and I love the characters that are in families. And so, yeah, I'm sure they talk about me as one of them in my family.
And you were born in Texas, but you quickly moved to go to school at UNC, North
Well,
Carolina.
I actually I grew up in North Carolina.
My
father grew up in Texas and took my mother to Texas, but she wasn't crazy about it. Mm-hmm. So I was raised in North Carolina.
Ah, and when you entered college, was music the plan all along, or did you get...
I mean, you know, I think it's such a fallacy to say that when you want to be a musician or an artist that there is a plan. I mean, there's not a 10-year track. There's no insurance. There's none of that stuff. I went to college a little bit late because I really was determined to be an artist, and I didn't quite know what my medium would be, but I was a real hothead, stubborn person. And so by the time I started college, I was in a writing program and trying to be a writer, and I put a band together, and I just kept getting gigs. And that sort of uncertainty was not easy, you know. It's not easy but I think that it was probably not easy for my parents. But I think that I think when you are making work, that's kind of what you follow.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say, well, I'm going to make this and it's going to get me there, and then I'll make this and it'll get me. I didn't know. I was just doing the best I could, making something good.
Well, you've released more than just seven albums. You've got two EPs and two live albums, and one of them was recorded, as I mentioned earlier, in London.
Yeah.
Buckingham Solo. So, I mean, in your experiences around the world, you like performing internationally? I mean, how do the audiences receive your music?
I do like performing internationally. I love Europe. I love being in Europe. I love the different currency and the different foods and the different languages. And it, you know, it feels like your world is getting, you are learning a lot when you're traveling like that. I've been very lucky that British audiences have been very, very kind to me. And you know, you're playing in Europe, a lot of times you're in a really old building that sounds really great, and the audiences are very, very quiet, and it's really wonderful. But, you know, I'm really thankful because most of the time I'm playing in the U.S., you know, the U.S. is such a cultural force in the world, and it's really hard to catch the ear here in the States because there's always so much going on. But in general, I'm playing for really nice people who listen as well. You know, I'm not playing for people who are throwing beer bottles at me or anything.
And I've asked that question to other artists, and the answer I get back is that people tend to listen more carefully out of the U.S. They're much better listeners to the music.
I think they are very quiet and respectful, and that isn't to say that American audiences aren't the same, because my audiences are so lovely. But I think there's also this, you have gotten on a plane and come a really long way, and it only happens once in a while. And so there's a kind of gratefulness for that, I think, that you encounter. Because I feel like on some level they know that it is hard to get all the gear and the kid and come overseas, and you have more than two bags. Boy, they look at us with those guitars and they just get so mad on the plane. So they know that that's hard. And I think in the U.S. it's more trying to get, let me get your attention and come to my show. And there's a little bit less of that when you're traveling internationally.
Well, you're, certainly loved in the U.S. as well as around the world.
I appreciate that.
Absolutely. And your music has appeared on the big screen and on the little screen, TV and films as well. So how does that make you feel? You're sitting in a movie and you're hearing your song in a theater, and you're surrounded by people that have no idea that's you singing the song that's playing on the screen.
Well, I really enjoy that kind of work. In fact, I've done some work with working directly with directors, and Eric and I did a film score where we actually played in the studio live to picture. And that's it's like you really are trying to perform with a visual and a plot, and your job is so different because you don't need to take up the whole room, when it's just like the TIFF show, I need to take up all the room and do all the work. But you really have this different, very subtle position when you're a part of a larger story. And I really, really enjoy that because I like seeing how other people bring their vision to life. It's really informative to me. When you make your own way, you're sort of working in the dark, and you go, well, I guess I'll do it this way. And it's really fun to observe someone else and lend yourself to helping them. Mm-hmm.
Well, you've been praised for the new album. Everybody seems to be giving it glowing reviews.
Nice.
So
thank you.
Stitch of the World is the name of the album. Would you do another song?
I will. I'm going to have to tune my guitar.
No problem.
Or Eric will kick me in the shins. but I'll tell you while I tune, this is a song that it's based on a Raymond Carver poem called My Boat. And when I read it, I thought, oh my gosh, that poem wants to be a song. And I was really lucky that Raymond Carver's widow, Tess Gallagher, liked it and thought the same. So, you ready, Eric? Okay. My boat is being made to order. Right now it's a builder. My boat. My friends, room on board for my friends. I'm serious about this. My boat, George, Gary, Chuck, and Jim. Room enough for all of them and my baby. On my boat.
Cheese and wine, everything good that my friend. could do whatever you want. On that boat, we may go a little way down the coast. We'll listen to the rolling storms. On that boat, always wanted a trip like that. If it don't work out, it's my boat. No one will be denied on my boat, on my boat.
Song. Tiff Merritt, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
I'm sure that, you know, if people around the world want to get your album, the new album, they can go to your website, Amazon, iTunes, wherever.
They can do all those things. It's those all those places.
And your website is?
TiffMerritt.com.
And
two R's and two D's in Merritt and T-I-F-T.
And social media, can they reach out
to you? Merritt. It's Tiff Merritt on all those. It's not, I tried to get tift.com, but that's the Texas International Fishing Tournament. So.
Somebody had it already.
Yeah.
So do you have time for your passions? I mean, I know you have your babies, your passion.
Yeah.
But photography, I guess, you love to take photographs.
You know, I feel like the question you just asked me is everything. I mean, time is really the true currency, mm-hmm. and there is not enough of it. Mm-hmm. I love to take pictures, and I started doing that before I had an iPhone, so I really love cameras and film and sort of the slowness of looking mm-hmm. as a writing tool. You know, I feel like most of the things in my life that I do turn eventually back to writing, and you need to look, you need to get out of yourself, you need to do things with your hands and shut your brain off, and so most of the hobbies I have are to kind of cool my brain down and give it some perspective in order to return to writing. But yeah, my daughter is a number one, and everything else is a lot of joy and fun, but goes back to writing.
And so what's the year ahead for you? I mean, touring, more touring?
Yeah, there's a lot of touring this year. Eric and I have a big tour with Jason Isabel in Europe this fall. That's exciting. We have our own touring all through spring and summer. And we have a festival that we're actually putting together in North Carolina, so that'll be fun. Cool. And you know, I have a birthday party, a first birthday party planned.
Right, of course.
So that's really what's going on.
Got your priorities straight. All right, Stitch of the World is the name of the new album. Make sure you get a copy. Tiff Merritt, thank you so much for coming on.
It's just been lovely. Thank you very
nice
much
to meet
for
you.
Having us.
Come back again and see us.
I'd love that.
All
thank
right,
you.
This is Border Crossings here on VOA TV.